Dan joining us?
I think so.
No, I don't.
Maybe not this afternoon. Stan coming back? Okay, it's.
My invitation got lost in the mail, Mayor.
There you go. Good afternoon, everyone, and welcome back to the afternoon session, City Council. Would you please call the roll?
Fritz?
Here.
Fish?
Here.
Saltzman? Novick?
Here.
Hales?
Here. And would you please read the two items?
Item 40, authorize a contract with Dr. Dennis Rosenbaum through Rosenbaum and Watson LLP to serve at the Independent Compliance Officer and Community Liaison for the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement and amend the fiscal year 2014-15 budget to reallocate funding. And 41, amend the fiscal year 2014-15 budget to include appropriation authority for additional expenses related to the United States Department of Justice Settlement Agreement regarding police practices.
Okay, thank you. This is a very important step in our agreement with the United States Department of Justice about how we change practices in the Portland Police Bureau. We've gone through a very detailed process to get to this point and to have a proposed contractor as our compliance officer community liaison. So I'm going to call up a panel to present the package to us, Ellen Osenak from the City Attorney's Office, Judy Prosper from the same, and Deanna Wesson-Mitchell from my staff. And we'll have them present the substance of this, and then we have some amendments on rather technical matters, but they're changing dollar amounts within the contract, within the proposed contract, and then we'll take public testimony. So if you three would please come up. Thank you very much. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon. Good afternoon, Mayor Hales and Commissioners. I'm Deputy City Attorney Judy Prosper, and it's my privilege to be here before you again with my colleague Ellen Osenak and Deanna Wesson-Mitchell this afternoon. As you directed in Ordinance 37093, passed on November 11, 2014, we have, together with Christine Moody, the City Chief Procurement Officer, negotiated a contract with Dr. Rosenbaum's team to serve as Community Liaison and Compliance Officer under COCL under the Department of Justice Settlement Agreement. We are here today to present this contract to you for your approval. Before I begin, I would like to clear up a few technical points. That is, what is before you today is a slightly different version from what was filed on December 31st by the City Attorney's Office. The changes are minor but necessary. On the ordinance itself, on the second page, there was a typo in the total not to exceed amount for the 5-year contract. It read $1,575 instead of $1,575,000.
And here we thought you just drove a hard ball.
Yes. Sorry. That change is on the second to the last line of the now therefore clause in section A.
Okay. And there's another correction in item 41, right?
I believe so. And my colleague Ellen will address that.
Okay.
In Exhibit 1 to the ordinance, the actual contract itself, on page 6 of 11, the final paragraph in the Statement of Work, General Responsibilities, and Payment Schedule section, we made a clarification about the required presence of either Dr. Rosenbaum or Dr. Watson at each of the quarterly town hall meetings convened by the COCL. You'll see that change in the last sentence of the last paragraph. Instead of Justice DeMunez will chair the quarterly meetings of the COAB, it will now read, Justice DeMunez will chair and preside over the quarterly meetings of the Community Oversight Advisory Board, COAB. Either Dr. Rosenbaum or Dr. Watson will attend the COCL's quarterly open town hall meetings to present the draft compliance reports to the COAB and to receive public comment on the assessments of compliance and recommendations as provided by the settlement agreement. Thank you. Those are the only two changes to this item. So now on to the substance of the contract. Recalling that on December 17th, 2012, The City of Portland and the United States Department of Justice filed a proposed settlement agreement in U.S. v. City of Portland. On January 30th, 2014, the city issued a request for resumes seeking a COCO pursuant to that agreement. Dr. Dennis Rosenbaum submitted an application in February of 2014, and his team was chosen by council to serve. This contract will be between the City of Portland and Rosenbaum and Watson LLP. The city's project manager for the contract is Deanna Wesson Mitchell, and she will review and approve the invoices submitted by the group. Pending your approval today, we intend the contract to be effective on January 10, 2015, and expire in 5 years on January 10, 2020, unless otherwise terminated or extended. Who's on the COCAL team? Dr. Dennis Rosenbaum is a full professor of criminology, law, and justice, and the director of the Center for Research in Law and Justice at the University of Illinois at Chicago. He will serve as the compliance officer and community liaison. Dr. Amy Watson is an associate professor at the Jane Addams College of Social Work at the University of Illinois at Chicago. She will be the co-director and mental health specialist. The Honorable Paul DeMunez, a retired Chief Justice of the Oregon Supreme Court and distinguished jurist in residence at Willamette University College of Law, will serve as the Director of Community Engagement. Mr. Thomas Christoph, doctoral candidate in criminology, law, and justice at the University of Illinois at Chicago, will serve as project manager and data collector. Dr. Jeff Alpert, professor of criminology and criminal justice at the University of South Carolina, will serve as a policy advisor. Compensation. The maximum annual sum to be paid on the contract is $315,000. A note here about the seeming rise in the cost of the contract. When Dr. Rosenbaum bid for the contract, he fully intended to be able to complete the work outlined in the settlement agreement for $240,000 per year. As interviews and negotiations progressed, the Portland community and the city recognized that the community liaison duties of the COCAL would need to be more robust than previously anticipated. The city is very fortunate that Dr. Rosenbaum was able to convince the Chief Justice to join the COCAL team and to lead and enhance the community engagement and local presence efforts. For the sake of easier accounting and reimbursement purposes, we merely separated the actual services for the various team members from reimbursable travel expenses. COCAL team members, including the Chief Justice, will receive payment of $240,000 for their professional services, and up to $75,000 may be reimbursed for documented travel expenses for the maximum total of $315,000. Reimbursement expenses will be based on the U.S. General Services Administration per diem rates, which can be accessed on the GSA website. These are the same rates as allowed for city employees. Hourly rates are not applicable to this contract, as it is a negotiated fixed fee that will be paid out in equal monthly increments. Early termination of the contract. In order for the COCAL team to maintain its utmost independence, the contract cannot easily be terminated by the city. We remove the standard termination for, quote, convenience clause that is present in most contracts. The city cannot merely terminate the contract if it is unhappy with the results of the COCAL team's analysis or recommendations. There are only a few discrete number of ways that the contract may be terminated. General responsibilities of the COCAL team. Aside from general contract terms, the responsibilities of the COCAL team boil down to four major categories, which are highlighted in the contract. One, the requirements of the settlement agreement. The COCAL is responsible for synthesizing data related to Portland Police Bureau's use of force, will report and be responsive to the City Council, DOJ, and the public, will gather input from the public related to PPB's compliance with the settlement agreement. COCAL team members will not be attached to any one city office and will be wholly independent of PPB. In sum, the COCAL team must comply with any requirements of the settlement agreement, which specifically reference work to be done by the COCAL. Number two, court appearances. The settlement agreement does not require the COCAL to attend any court proceedings. The city, however, is currently required by the court to direct the COCAL to attend court appearances. The frequency and scope of any such court appearances are not yet determined, and the city is presently unable to accurately predict the scope of work that may be required of the COCAL. We have added a provision that states that if the COCAL is required to appear in court more than once per calendar year, those additional appearances are outside the scope of the work and compensation under this contract and will be separately negotiated. Number three, community engagement and local presence. As previously mentioned, a high level of in-person service to the public and the city is necessary for the success of this endeavor. Toward that end, Justice DeMunez will, for the first 6 months of the contract, dedicate 2 to 3 days per week for community engagement. And thereafter, he'll dedicate at least 1 day per week. Justice DeMunez will chair and preside over the COAB. Those meetings must happen at least quarterly, and once the COAB is seated, specific scheduling decisions will be made by that body together with the COCAL team. Dr. Rosenbaum and or Dr. Watson will hold in-person meetings every month with relevant stakeholders and will maintain weekly contact throughout the contract. Either Dr. Rosenbaum or Dr. Watson must attend the COCAL's quarterly open town hall meetings to present the draft compliance reports to the COAB and to receive public comment. Number four, the work plan. The COCAL team will provide a first-year draft work plan no later than January 31st, 2015, recognizing that once the COAB is seated, adjustments may need to be made to this plan. These are the basic provisions of the contract. We hope it complies with your expectations and that you will approve it today. Ellen, Christine, and I will be glad to answer any questions you have. Thank you for your attention and consideration.
Thank you. Questions?
So just to reemphasize, you said that the contract does include one trip per year to go to the Judge Simon at his behest.
Yes, Commissioner. One per year. If there are in excess of one, we would renegotiate. We would negotiate for those.
So the expectation is that if the judge requires more than that, then we would pay more, but that we would expect the COCAL to come as often as the judge wants him to.
As often as he's able, yes.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Okay. And then do you need us to move those amendments?
Please.
Yeah, before we take public testimony, we should. So you want to do that now? Okay. Do I hear a motion to put
move
the amendments
as
second?
Outlined by our deputy city attorney.
Is there a second?
Second.
Further discussion on adopting those amendments so that we can hear public testimony on those as well. Then roll call on the amendments.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Done. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay. On.
Good afternoon. I'm Ellen Osnack. I'm a deputy city attorney in your city attorney's office, and I'm here today to talk about item 41, which is an ordinance that allocates $250,000 for additional expenses that the city anticipates to incur related to the Community Oversight Advisory Board, as well as administrative support for the community compliance officer and community liaison, which is the COCAL. So the settlement agreement that we have with the Department of Justice requires us to provide administrative support for both the compliance officer and community liaison, the COCAL, as well as the Community Oversight and Advisory Board, or the COAB. So during our negotiations with the COCAL team, they identified some critical elements of administrative support for their work. I'd like to pause here to observe that the COCAL team has been fairly extraordinary already in their efforts to engage the community. This contract has not yet been entered, but in order to do outreach, Justice DeMunez has spent over 9 days here in Portland attending various community meetings. The entire COCAL team flew out to Portland several weeks ago. They also met with numerous stakeholders, including members of council, members of the community, members of the police bureau. And based on all of those conversations, they identified what they thought were some critical administrative support, not only for the COCAL team, but what they anticipated might be some of the needs of the Community Oversight and Advisory Board. And so the ordinance before you today that allocates money is to address some of that input that they received from the community. So some of the elements that they identified included staffing for their own work, office space, website development and hosting, conference calling services, photocopies, and other basic supplies and equipment. So the city has been moving forward with selecting members for the Community Oversight and Advisory Board, or COAB. Those efforts are being led by Commissioner Fritz, as well as Mayor Hales. And so for context here, the COAB is a group of individuals who will work with the COCL to monitor implementation of the settlement agreement. And the city is currently accepting applications. If you are interested in applying, you can Google COAB application, or you can go to the website of Commissioner Fritz or the website of Mayor Hales, and you'll find applications there.
And the deadline is this Friday, so do it today.
Yes. So as I mentioned, the city is required to provide administrative support for the COAB. Justice DeMunis identified website development and hosting, as well as recording of those meetings, as critical services that he thinks that the COAB should provide. The current expectation is that the COAB will have its first meeting on February 9th. Not to discourage people, and in fact, many people have already applied to be part of this important public service, but there is a tremendous amount of work that the COAB will need to get done in its first 3 months. I'll just highlight what they have to accomplish no later than mid-May of this year. They are required to hold two hearings to gather public input about the status of the Police Bureau's current community outreach efforts. They need to create a process for receiving and passing on to the COCL public comments on the COCL's first report, which will assess the city's implementation of the settlement agreement. They need to attend a town hall to discuss the COCL's first report. They need to draft their own feedback regarding the report. And finally, they need to consult with the city regarding a survey of the community about their experiences and perceptions of police outreach and accountability. So, given the amount of work that the COAB must accomplish in this very tight timeline, we can reasonably anticipate significant startup costs, although it is difficult to be precise at this point about exact expenditures. The ordinance before you allocates a total of $250,000 from contingency to cover the administrative costs identified by the COCL, as well as the anticipated costs associated with the COAB. $45,000 of the funds will be allocated to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement to fund through July 1st a staff person whose job it is to provide administrative services to the COCL team. For example, this person would be expected to make travel arrangements for the COCL team, prepare invoices and correspondence, schedule meetings, respond to inquiries, make copies, and manage website content. Council previously allocated money for a separate administrative support for the COAB, as we are required to do by the settlement agreement. So that person will be a mental health specialist whose job it is to provide administrative support for the COAB and to broadly facilitate civic participation of people with lived experience of mental illness in the implementation of the settlement agreement. The city is currently accepting job applications for the mental health specialist position. Both the mental health specialist position as well as the COCL staff support position that is before you in the ordinance today will be assigned to the Office of Neighborhood Involvement. We expect that they will work closely together to support the work of the COCL and COAB. Deanna Wesson-Mitchell has more details on the uses to which the remaining $205,000 that you are allocating today will be put. And I will pause at this moment to now offer an amendment because there is yet another error in the numbers that we put in there. And in fact, I believe the original ordinance listed $215,000 to be allocated for expenses when the amount should be $205,000, which added to $45,000 equals $250,000. So I'm available to answer any questions. Thank you.
So a motion to adopt that amendment as well?
So moved.
Is there a second?
Second.
Any discussion? Roll call on amending the dollar amount to $205,000.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Novick?
Aye.
Hales?
Aye. Okay, thank you.
Ellen, I have a couple questions, but should we wait till the whole panel is finished and then come with questions?
Either way. Go ahead.
Are you speaking?
Go ahead. Please.
Yeah.
I'll hold until okay, Deanna's got a few more points to make. Why don't we
complete
do that?
Complete the presentation.
Okay.
Deanna Wesson-Mitchell with Policy Director with the Mayor's Office. And Ellen and Judy have talked about most of the things I had to talk about, but just kind of clarifying that The office space is, they've selected to be a Rosewood Initiative at 162nd and Stark. It is a facility that's open to the community that has, they're already involving the COCAL in their community outreach out there. And the extra money is going to pay for office space lease, setting up the cubes, computers, phone lines, meeting facilitation location, if there's cost for that. Justice Muniz has requested that, really wants all of the meetings to be televised, so making sure that those costs are covered. If we can have, there's just a lot of details that are going to be, need to be paid for. So that's kind of where that money is going to be used. It's all, we really want to do everything that we can to make sure they have all they need to be successful. And we assume that by the end of this budget year, we'll have a much better idea of what those regular costs will be beyond just getting the startup fees done.
Okay, questions?
Thank you. Two questions. First is, on the legal issue of the termination of the contract of the COCAL, to what extent does the COAB have any authority on this issue? So I've last week nominated Abel Gordley as my representative, as my candidate. So the board is composed, and after year one, the COAB says we don't like the job that the COCAL is doing. So under the proposed contract, how would we resolve that issue?
The settlement agreement really contemplates a cooperative working relationship between the COCL and COAB. So the settlement agreement itself never included provisions for the removal of the COCL by the COAB. Conversely, however, as the chair of the COAB, the COCL has a process that is outlined in the settlement agreement if there is a member of the COAB who either leaves or is removed, and there's a process for that. So to answer your question, in terms of terminating the contract, the COAB is a recommending body. So they certainly could recommend that the contract be terminated if they thought that the COCL was failing to perform the duties imposed by the settlement agreement. But they're limited to recommendations. They don't have the power to terminate the contract.
Okay. And second, on the budget side, can you just walk me through what is the pure startup costs, and then what do we anticipate will be the ongoing costs? And is it your intention, Mayor, to seek ongoing funding in the normal budget process for a certain number of years to cover this? So could
second,
you...
Second question, yes.
Yes on the second question. So What after the first year startup costs plus budget, what do you anticipate the number in the out years?
I really don't. We're looking to see what it's going to cost. I think other committees in the city have, I believe HRC's budget is about $30,000 a year. The community, PCOT, I mean, each committee has a budget to achieve their goals. We're really going to need to know more what, because the COAB is going to be very much creating what they want to do and figure out what is reasonably needed to accomplish their goals over longer term.
But in any event, we'll take that up in the normal budget cycle.
We'll have a little more information than we have now.
Some more information. Yes. We'll have a placeholder number, right, and you'll be seeking ongoing funding for that.
Yes, come the next budget.
Okay, thank you.
Other questions for our panel? And we may have more later, but thank all three of you. And then I know we have public testimony, but we also have, if there are council questions, Chief Justice DeMunis is here as a representative of the proposed contractor team, and we also have representing the Department of Justice, our United States Attorney, and members of First Staff. I want to give you, Amanda, and your team an opportunity to respond to the efficacy of what we're doing here and the sufficiency of it. So take you first, if show you the courtesies properly due to you as a federal official. So thank you for being here.
Thank you, Mr. Mayor. Thank you, members of council. I would like to just make a few brief comments. Initially, I just want to thank the city on my behalf and behalf of the Department of Justice for identifying the compliance officer community liaison and putting forward this contract. It's an important first step in implementing our joint settlement agreement, and so we appreciate your movement on this issue.
we commit to the citizens of Portland again that the United States is dedicated to implementation of this agreement. We will be monitoring the city at every step of the way and holding the city accountable. This partnership that we have with the city has been unique. It's something that only exists in the city of Portland, and the collaborative relationship we have had has led us to this settlement agreement and this implementation, and will continue going forward so that the city and the Department of Justice can achieve our shared goals. I will also want to remind the community that the agreement creates the Community Oversight Advisory Board to inform and advise the city, the United States, and the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition, and Dr. Rosenbaum's team. Applications, as has been mentioned, are available from the city now through Friday, and we encourage members of the community to apply. The advisory board will bring the community voices to the center of this discussion and will help inform the progress that we make moving forward. So thank you again for moving forward on this contract today.
Thank you. Questions? Thank you so much. Okay. Let's move into public testimony.
Okay. We have 13 people signed up. Okay. The first three, please come on up, are Dan Handelman, Jan Friedman, and Joanne Hardesty.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Mayor Hales. I'm Dan Handelman. I'm with Portland Cop Watch, and I have some comments about the contract that is before you. Kind of goes back to the discussions we were having in October when the council was announcing its intent to object to the judge's court order or asking for your annual appearance. I'm glad that that annual appearance is written into this ordinance, but the implication of their, you know, that the city is currently required to come in on the annual hearing, you know, reminds us that you have not yet rescinded your efforts to appeal that. The very minimal review that the judge is going to be giving to you each year, and we urge you to rescind that appeal.
We need to clarify that, Dan. We have not appealed the requirement for an annual hearing. We've appealed evidentiary issues beneath that, but the requirement to appear at an annual hearing is in the agreement. We subscribe to that, every other provision of the agreement. And in fact, as you may have seen, what our mediation questionnaire that says specifically that we are docketed for a hearing on September 14th of this year at 9 a.m., and the city intends to appear at that hearing. So there's no question that we will appear at the annual hearing as required. The only question that's before the mediation panel that's now taking place is the evidentiary question of what evidence has to be presented and how often.
Mayor Hales, I'm glad you're mentioning this document because you need to read that last paragraph on the first page, which explicitly questions the judge's authority to order these hearings. That's what the city is appealing. That is what the
additional
city
hearings.
That is not what it's questioning. It's questioning whether the judge has the order.
We'll get Ms. Osenak up to clarify
okay,
that
but
later.
That's, I mean, my point is that I don't think that's what the city is appealing. That's not what it says. In that sense, shortly thereafter, the city chose, after community members said, please choose a local person because we need somebody on the ground, we asked you to choose a local person, and you chose this team from Chicago. And now you're allocating $75,000 extra dollars to fly them in, which you wouldn't have to pay if you'd chosen somebody local. And $75,000 could pay for an extra investigator in IPR, a staff person for the CRC, or could fund Portland Cop Watch for 12 years. So that's a lot of money from our point of view to fly people in and out. The implication or the only mention of the meetings, as your staff just told you, is that there will be quarterly meetings. The COAB, I think everybody's expecting them to meet at least monthly with all the workload they have. And if I'm hoping that Justice DeMuse is expected to chair those too, because that's what the contract, well, that's what the settlement agreement says. So it should say is expected to chair quarterly and any other meetings. You know, since that's being amended now, you might as well amend it and say and any other meetings of the COAB. The contract also says that it will terminate when the DOJ agrees that the city's in compliance. The settlement agreement says the city has to be fully in compliance for 1 year before it's done. I'm hoping the contract can be written more clearly so that the COCL's job will continue for that year until the city is fully in compliance with the settlement agreement as written. Judge Dominguez's role is that was promised to us by counsel is that he's going to be here 3 days a week. The contract now says 2 or 3 days a week for 6 months, and then after that, only 1 day a week. So we're still not going to have real eyes and ears on the ground from this out-of-town COCL. Finally, I just want to say that, you know, as a member of the steering committee of the AMA coalition, that it, or the collaborative agreement between the city and the AMA coalition says any efforts to weaken the settlement agreement, we're going to oppose. And despite what you're saying, that you think you're trying to appeal whether there's going to be more or whether what the terms are going to be of these annual hearings, this is a challenge to the judge's authority to hold hearings at all, and you should just drop the appeal.
Thank you. Joanne, welcome.
Thank you. Good afternoon. For the record, I'm Joanne Hardesty, and I'm here representing the AMA Coalition for Justice and Police Reform. Dan said a lot of what I wanted to say. One thing, however, that I want to put on the record is that I do not believe that a police officer should be overseeing the contract of the oversight of fixing what's wrong with Portland Police. You may remember that the settlement agreement specifically made sure that the COCO did not work for any individual city council member. In fact, the COCO works for the entire city council, and it is inappropriate to have a police officer be the one deciding whether or not the contractors are doing the job that they've been hired to do. And so I would hope that you would change that.
Who do you recommend, Joanne?
I recommend the auditor, which they are set up to audit stuff, as one example. But
one Ms. Weston Mitchell is a former police officer, not a police officer. And secondly, this is intended as a temporary arrangement until the staff person that was just described is hired.
In the Office of Neighborhood Involvement is
yes.
Where you expect that to be?
Mm-hmm.
I just think it sets a wrong precedent when she may not be a police officer today, but she still has the opportunity to go back and be a police officer if she so desires.
Well, somebody has to administer this until such time as their staff.
I bet the auditor would be happy to help.
Okay, well, we can ask that question.
Okay, yeah. And so I also agree with Dan in regard to having nobody on the ground on a regular basis that's actually engaging community members and what's going on with the police. Judge Dominguez, 6 months, the contract's for 5 years. So the fact that we're going to go from 2 to 3 days, which is wiggly, to 1 day a month, I think is totally inappropriate for this contract. We need people on the ground engaging people where they are. That means where houseless people are, where grassroots African-American youth are hanging out. And I love Judge Dominguez, but I don't think he's a grassroots outreach person. And so who's going to be the liaison to make sure that real voices are included into this process? And I know we talked about putting a computer system in place, but again, that only works for people who have computers. Doesn't work for the rest of us. And so it's important that when we put this system together, that it is transparent and people who need to access it know how to access it. I'd hate to have a phone number that only gets answered once a week because Judge Dominguez isn't there the other days.
But just as a point of information on that, that's the intent of the administrative assistant in the second ordinance.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a terrific suggestion about having some outreach experience that we can put that in the job description for that person. But certainly the intent is that that would be a full-time person who would be answering the phone in person.
Thank you, Commissioner Fritz. I appreciate that. There was one last point that I was going to make. The cost. I think what we're hearing is very fluffy numbers, and so I'm unclear if the $75,000 is what's being paid to Dr. Dominguez or if that is the budget to put the office in place, the computer system in place, and hire staff.
I believe that's a not-to-exceed amount for travel expenses that's billed against and receipted against incrementally.
But if you look at the other page where it says subcontractors, I see Judge Dominguez receiving $75,000 annually in this contract. And so that's why I'm confused. I thought there was $75,000 for travel.
Right.
And then another $75,000 for Judge DeMunez.
Which is part of the 240.
Yeah, within the 240.
Which is part of the 240.
Right. And okay, then there's the second 250 in the second ordinance for all of the support, the cable TV, the administrative assistant, the office space, those kinds of things.
Well, thank you, because this document does not make that clear.
Okay.
It appeared differently. And so I heard the testimony, but it didn't match what I was reading.
Okay, we'll get that. We'll get them back up on that point.
I think that's a good point. I was quite concerned about the speed in which we're having to do all of this. It's required by the settlement. The DOJ has been accepting of some feedback, but also definitely pushing us to continue doing things as fast as we can. So I share the concern that there hasn't necessarily been the time available to, as was shown by all of the typos that we had to get corrected. So thank you, and we acknowledge that that's a valid concern.
Thank you. And last thing, but not least, I actually have something positive that I like about this contract.
As much time as you want.
I want to appreciate Judge DeMunez going out to Rosewood Initiative and determining that he was going to set up an office in that community, because that is a community that desperately needs this kind of service right there. So that is a wonderful, wonderful outcome of this contract. Thank you.
Thank you.
I just wanted to note, Commissioner Fritz, that this is called an ordinance as well at the top of the page. So.
I saw that in the draft, and I forgot to correct it. Sorry.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Commissioner, I once filed a brief on behalf of the Untied States, so you've got lots of company.
Welcome.
Thank you. I'm Jan Friedman. I'm a staff attorney with Disability Rights Oregon. We're also part of the Albina Ministerial Alliance. Bob Jundeff has been on the committee that chose the COCAL, and we're a member of the Portland Police Bureau Behavioral Health Unit Advisory Committee. And I'm here today with concern regarding this annual hearing before the judge, and that be something that be put in place, and that it be put in place in perpetuity. There's a reason that people go before a neutral, impartial person, and I think the reasons for that exist in this situation. We have a situation where our clients, people with mental illness, were being victims of excessive use of force by the Portland Police Bureau. Now, that's a very serious matter. That's the reason the settlement agreement's in place, and I think that it would be wrong to put this in the hands of anybody other than a totally impartial body. If Judge Simon's not serving that role, you have a different judge in that position. But you need people to go before the judge, and you need not for the COCAL to be brought at the request of the city, but for them to be required to be there. I'm not sure how, because the city shouldn't be involved. The COCAL, from my understanding at the outset of this, was a totally independent, free-floating entity that was there to ensure that the settlement agreement was actually going to take place as it should be, or to try to get things, you know, hey, things aren't going to go perfect, but we need to hear about it. We need to hear about it at least once a year in terms of how things are going. So I think if there's any thought at removing that piece, that's a mistake. And it's a mistake for our clients. Our clients already have a large trust issue. There's been long periods of time, as well as certain individuals who would never call the police because they're worried about their family member. They'd like them to live and have trouble rather than die, potentially. So I think that, you know, we have a obviously very serious situation, and we need to have that impartial body. There's a reason why we have a judicial system. And it's to handle these very sorts of matters. And like juvenile dependency cases, there's periodic reviews to see what's happening with those children. We don't have children. We have adults. We have children. We have citizens of Portland. But it's very important to keep that in place.
Can I ask you a question?
Yeah.
So from the point of view of your clients, what do you expect to be accomplished through these annual reviews? So what do you expect the judge to do, and what do you view is the scope of the judge's authority?
So in terms of what the judge would do is the judge would sit and listen to the information that's related to the settlement agreement and get a read on how things are going and if anything is off or if something needs to be tinkered with or if something needs to be changed. That's what the judge would do, would be listening and also taking in that information and saying, well, it looks like we're not here on this. Looks like we're here and doing a good job on that. Looks like there could be a change on this. In terms of scope of authority, that's a harder question. And I'm not sure exactly what the scope of their authority would be, but I would think it would be, at the very least, to be the person who's an expert on the settlement agreement, who can take in the facts, and who can make a determination as to where we're at on that settlement agreement. Are we in compliance
and just,
or not?
Just to clarify, in this matter, I'm a client and not a lawyer. So I'm getting advice from the city attorney's office. And I have not been able to get from anybody clarity about what is the scope of the judge's authority. And I believe that is in part why the city has sought review of this issue, to have someone tell them. And it's not an incidental thing. And the reason I asked you about what your client's expectations are, if it's a hearing for the purpose of the judge taking evidence and saying, I'll give you an A in this area, B in this area, and this area needs work, that's one thing. But what if it's a hearing and at the end the judge says, okay, I don't think this is working, and so I'm going to direct that this agreement be changed. And I'm going to do it even though Joanne Hardesty doesn't agree with me, because I have a view that it should be done differently. I mean, that's not an incidental question to ask what the scope of the authority is, because we are submitting to the jurisdiction of a court. The analogy that you gave about a protected person, well, you've got a thick rule book that says what you know exactly what the court's authority is, because it's statutory, because there's case law. We're creating something. And so I don't want to get lost in this discussion that the question of what is the scope of the judge's authority is something the city sincerely wants to have clarified. And I suppose you can go to the judge and ask, or I suppose you can go to reviewing court, or I suppose we can try to negotiate it. But I still haven't had someone explain to me what the scope is, and I don't want either side going into this with false expectations.
No, I mean, I think it makes sense to know what the scope is. I don't think that this is your standard proceeding before a judge. This is something different.
No, I get
because
it.
It's, comes from a settlement agreement. I don't think it's a bad idea to ask Judge Simon what he thinks, and maybe everybody says, fine, that looks good.
The judge was pretty clear that he has no authority to change the settlement agreement at all. The judge was really clear that what he wanted was a verbal report once a year, because he did not want to wait until year 5 when the city of Portland came in and said everything is lovely and then have to review 5 years of data in that 5th year. I think the judge was really clear. He didn't hesitate at all in what he said he wanted.
Mm-hmm. And Joanne, since you're maybe more current in some of this than I am, is that in writing or something the judge said in open court?
He said it in open court, and it's part of his statement on him accepting the settlement agreement under these conditions. Okay. So, yes, it's readily available.
And I should further that. He said, all I can do is ask questions.
Yes.
He was very clear about that.
Yes, he was.
And the city attorneys asked him that question in the court, and that's what he said. All I can do is ask questions.
And he also said that there would be no testimony, no cross-examination. I mean, the judge is really clear, so I don't know what the clarification issues are that you guys have.
Okay, we'll ask the city attorney to come up and tell us that. So thank you all very much.
I appreciate the discussion.
You're welcome. Yeah, I'm glad I could help.
So there's a record of that proceeding,
yes,
and this is sounding familiar to me now.
You were there.
You guys have much better recollection exactly as to what he said. But get the record, because I think he did make it very clear that he wasn't going to, jump in and do something to shake the whole thing up. I mean, he's really just trying to be helpful, right? Make sure that there's a marking point.
Mm-hmm. Well, there may be a reason to shake it up, but that's just I want to be respectful of the fact that we're not the only party.
Right.
And every inch of the way, there's been a concern about doing this a certain way. So at the end, I'm just conceptually reluctant to say, well, we're going to make someone king for a day. That may be against the desires of one or more of the parties.
Well, you may remember the reason that there was
a day. I probably don't, but I.
There was a day and a half at the fairness hearing,
right,
where a communities member came and they made a compelling case to Judge Simon that we needed someone outside of the city of Portland looking at this review and these transformation of Portland Police. And because the buck stopped with him, since he has the settlement agreement on his docket, people asked him, they want him involved. Your community said they didn't trust this city council to do it on its own. And that's part of the public record as well.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
So since we're bearing down on this point, I think it would be useful to get Ms. Osenak back up and maybe Ms. Prosper as well, but I think you, Alan, are the authority on that process. Judy's going to take a pass on that. And get you to do a better job than perhaps I did earlier of iterating why this issue needs to be appealed and clarified.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not sure I can put it much more clearly than Commissioner Fish did. The panel that was just up here is correct that Judge Simon, the city, along with other parties, had repeatedly sought clarity from him about what the intended purpose of the hearings were, whether or not cross-examination would be allowed, whether or not anybody besides the COCL would be required to present evidence, whether or not the community would be able to participate, what exactly the hearings looked like, because I cannot stress enough that there is no other court in this country in this type of agreement where you have a case that was filed, dismissed pursuant to a settlement agreement. There is no other court that has ever convened periodic hearings in a dismissed case. So this is not something where any applicable procedures are readily available to the parties or the court to fashion what these hearings are going to look like. And it is absolutely correct, and the parties have the record of the proceedings, that Judge Simon gave indications from the bench about what he would, you know, like these hearings to look like. And so what the city and the United States and the PPA did was to take those statements that Judge Simon had made and to transcribe them into a written document that had all of the limitations that he said that he thought were applicable, including the fact that he didn't have the authority to order the parties to do anything, that the hearing would not be evidentiary, that there would not be any cross-examination, that the COCL would be the person that was presenting information since it's an independent assessment, that the COCL would be the person presenting information to the court. And Judge Simon rejected that order. He did not enter in writing the limitations that he had orally suggested would be appropriate in the hearing. And so it is entirely unclear in this very novel proceeding what the parties can expect. And in particular, there is a legitimate concern that the compliance officer team is supposed to be an independent assessor. And so to have that person be subject to cross-examination from the city, the Portland Police Association, the Albina Ministerial Alliance, all of whom may have concerns and questions that can undermine the authority of the COCL, it is in direct conflict with the intent of the parties in entering into this settlement agreement. The Department of Justice is the monitor of this settlement agreement. As the United States Attorney, you know, said, that's a very unique arrangement. It is something, and we created a community oversight advisory body to have maximum community input, again, unprecedented in the country. And so we took great care, painstaking detail as we crafted the settlement agreement to describe the various roles. And so to have at the end an order that does not describe the role that the city invited, agreed that the judge should play on an annual basis is concerning.
Ellen, let me just push on this point a little bit. So if we're not clear and you've described what you view as the challenge, the problem, what are the different options that we would have to clarify it? For example, can we go back to the judge and ask either for clarification or reconsideration? That number one. Number two, what can we accomplish through mediation, and is the judge a party to that? And number three, what's the what are the potential benefits of the appeal in terms of getting clarification?
So let me take those in order. In terms of what we might accomplish in mediation, I'm pleased
first,
to...
First one was, could we just ask?
Could we just ask? That's right, yes. Thank you. So the first one is, can we just ask? Because the case is dismissed, we are in an awkward procedural posture to file a motion for reconsideration. We don't want the judge to reconsider or undo the settlement agreement. The order he entered ordered the settlement agreement as approved in an order of the court. So we don't wish to have him reconsider that.
Couldn't we do it less formally and just send a letter? I mean, judges get letters all the time. They're the nature of motions, but without the formality.
Yeah, I mean, we certainly thought of that in this case. Judge Simon, probably rightly so, has been reluctant to have that sort of informal communication with the parties. I think there is a level of public interest and involvement that probably militates against that kind of informal communication.
You made a judgment that may not be the best route. What about the other two?
So I'm pleased to report that the Ninth Circuit agreed with the city that mediation is appropriate in this case. We had requested mediation, and we were granted that request due in no small part to the fact that the United States and the Portland Police Alliance, who are parties to the appeal, also agreed that they thought that mediation would be appropriate in this case. In terms of what we can expect from an outcome, what we hope is to be able to come to an agreement about what procedures should apply in this, you know, very novel hearing. And so it's hard to predict exactly how we will communicate.
How would a voluntary agreement through mediation be binding on Judge Simon?
Well, I think we all anticipate, let me say this, the Ninth Circuit mediation program is very robust, and the mediators are very creative. And so we expect that the mediators will be able to assist us in figuring out exactly the answer to your question. How might we craft an order that we can present to Judge Simon that will work for him and us?
And the fallback is the appeal, which is to have the Ninth Circuit rule on this.
Yes, that's correct. And again, that's not... that's a bridge we'll have to cross when we come to it. That's certainly not the city's intent. We absolutely think, as do the other parties, that mediation is going to result in the clarity that we need to go forward.
What's the reasonable timeline, you think, under which mediation could either be successful or not?
Well, we have an in-person mediation session scheduled for February 23rd, so quite soon. And again, I think our hope is that we will, you know, really dig in at that session and produce procedures that work for everybody, and then hopefully they work for Judge Simon.
Just remind us, if you would, when would be the earliest date that annual hearing would be held before Judge Simon?
It's currently scheduled in September of 2015, and we've already indicated to the United States, and Mayor Hales and Commissioner Fritz and other members of council have repeatedly said, we absolutely intend to appear at that hearing, and the best evidence of that is that we did not seek a stay of Judge Simon's order.
So just to make sure I understand, we may in late February, early March, be able to resolve this issue through mediation, which obviously is the best possible outcome because it's a voluntary agreement by the parties. If not, the council will have a chance to get briefed again on next steps. And in any event, the annual hearing isn't for many months down the road, and we've already made clear we intend to fully participate in that hearing, correct?
Exactly.
Well, that's helpful for me.
Other questions for Ellen? There were questions raised by Mr. Handelman about the contract, which I'm going to hold because we may have other suggestions from folks that testify, but I'm going to call Ms. Wes Mitchell and Ms. Prosper back up at the end to take up those questions. I was noting them as we went along. So, are there other questions for Ellen? If not, then we'll take more public testimony, please.
The next three are Chris Lowe, M. Mayo, and Nancy Newell.
Afternoon. My name is Chris Lowe. I'm here representing Portland Jobs with Justice, which is a coalition of a labor community coalition for workers' rights and social justice in town. I was here in October urging you not to make the appeal that you voted to make. I'm here today to urge you to withdraw that appeal. I'm doing it in relationship to the community COCL and issues of trust and making this, I'm assuming good faith on the part of you as individuals, but I also want to communicate to you that you are distrusted as an institution, not you as individual city councilors, but the city council, which has a pattern of practice that has created distrust in the community over a number of decades and a number of personnel changes. So if we assume that the best will to make this settlement be a path forward for improved policing and improved community trust, then I think that puts a different light on this appeal. From my point of view, the COCL needs to have community trust. And if Judge Simon is in the process, then that strengthens the COCL, gives them both on the enforcement side, they're about compliance, and the community liaison side, an extra tool. It's going to help with the COAB to make the whole process more open, more transparent, bring people in, feel like it's more trusted. On the other hand, if you pursue this appeal, what you are doing is you're saying the institutional prerogatives of the city council as an institution outweigh the questions of community trust to improve the policing and to make this whole thing work better.
I just asked you a question. Were you here for the exchange we just had with
Ellen?
Yes,
I was.
And I appreciate your testimony, but did you listen to that exchange?
I did.
And so you're still framing this as a question of trust when you heard the lawyers explain to us that there's still an open question which potentially negatively impacts all the parties, and you're framing it because you may have a different view, sir, but you're framing that as a trust question?
None of the parties
actually know what the scope of the judge's authority is?
No.
We'll have your turn.
Right. Later in my testimony, I was going to come back to this exactly the question you're raising. I can try and do it now. I hope you'll give me a little latitude on
sure.
my 3 minutes.
Please.
What I heard was a very procedurally oriented set of arguments, and one of the key issues here is the parties, right? So one of the unusual features of this settlement is that there are three direct parties, the Department of Justice, the city, and the Portland, the police union. And then there is the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition, which is not a full party, but has been given certain kinds of processes for engaging in it. Now, the problem with the mediation procedure is that you might come to an agreement between yourselves and the police union and the Department of Justice, but the voice of the community that has been brought in through the Albina Ministerial Alliance Coalition is not part of that mediation. So, you know, and I think, you know, from my point of view, the question of other kinds of negotiation ought to be out there as well, you know. Have the city sit down with the Department of Justice and with it, you know, in a more informal kind of way, not a formal Ninth District mediation process, but say, okay, how can we, what are the things that we really need to have clarified, and how could we define that in a way, and then take that to the judge? You know, I think that the legalism of all of this is why I'm raising it as a trust issue. And I'm also raising it as a political issue and a trust issue for you to think about. You know, I understand the arguments, but what I see coming down the road is that a potential perception that, you know, what I understand Judge Simon to be basically there doing with what he came up with is being a backstop against evasion, right? So I've heard testimony before this council from the police bureau that they've, you know, moved something on 80% of the issues under the settlement. okay, that's fine, but what's the quality of the reporting? And that's my understanding, really, of what Judge Simon would be intervening is. What's the quality of the reporting?
You're not being timed at all, and I appreciate the discussion. Yeah. How is that different from what the COCAL and the COAB are doing? Isn't that primarily the responsibility of the COCAL and the COAB to look at what the police are doing?
It's a